Policy. I'm Sarah Wildman, and this is the ER.
Nice to see you.
Do you know Sarah? Good.
Hi, it's Sarah Wildman. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. It's been a long time.
It's been a while, yeah.
So? Let them go up? Or?
Yes. Maybe we'll let them go up and then get the elevator.
That was Ambassador Martin Indyk in the elevator with producer Dan Efron and me. He dropped by Foreign Policy to talk about Donald Trump's decision to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which will happen on May 14th. There's actually a long backstory to Trump's decision. Congress passed the Jerusalem Embassy Act in the fall of 1995. That's almost 23 years ago. But it wasn't really something that then-President Bill Clinton wanted at the time. It wasn't even something Israel wanted at the time, or at least not the ruling party. Then-Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, who was prime minister in 1995, felt a little cornered by the initiative. In essence, the core components of the bill came from two places. Opponents of the peace process, the Oslo Accords, in Israel, the Likud party, then in opposition, led by Benjamin Netanyahu, now prime minister. In the U.S., it was domestic politics, a bid for Jewish votes for the then presidential candidate, Bob Dole, the Republican senator, who chose to launch the bill at the pro-Israel lobby APEX annual conference. Support for this bill was overwhelming. The White House knew it was coming, and so they inserted a waiver, a clause, which allowed the president to suspend the move of the embassy every 6 months. And that waiver has been triggered by every president since, every 6 months until now. Martin Indyk, who actually worked for AIPAC in the 80s, was a Clinton administration insider. He worked for the White House and was twice U.S. ambassador to Israel. First of all, welcome, Ambassador Indyk. It's an honor to meet you. Thanks for being here. And of course, we're here today because on May 14th, Trump has promised and will move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv under the auspices of the Jerusalem Embassy Act of 1995. And I want to know how we got to that point to begin with.
Moving the embassy to Jerusalem has always, and I would say only, been a domestic political issue in the United States. While Israelis across the political spectrum welcome it, it's never been a real priority for them. Jerusalem is their capital. That's the reality. And having the United States or anybody else recognize it is kind of icing on the cake, but it's really not that important, especially if it's going to come at some price, either in terms of violence or in terms of disrupting the effort to make peace. So in that context, every presidential candidate, in order to try to woo the Jewish vote, promises to move the embassy to Jerusalem. And so in that's the context in which the Jerusalem Embassy Act was passed. I think it was in October, November of 1995.
But let's go to spring, right? And you just mentioned that this was a domestic American political move. And my understanding is that Bob Dole wanted to woo the Jewish vote coming into the presidential election campaign season for 1996. Tell us when you knew that that was going to be on the table.
My memory is not that good to tell you exactly when I knew it, but I do recall that Bob Dole had a problem mm-hmm. with the pro-Israel community. That year of that he was trying to get the nomination and then run against President Clinton. And he had a problem because he'd taken positions, including on Jerusalem, mm-hmm. which was seen as negative towards Israel. So he seized on this issue and pushed it at a time when certainly Yitzhak Rabin was not urging it, but he pushed it as a way of vetting his pro-Israel credentials with the American Jewish community.
So from my understanding is that AIPAC, where you had actually previously served, was itself interested in perhaps a letter, some sort of statement of support for the idea, but no legislation. And then, in fact, this actually preempts almost everyone when he introduces this. And my understanding is that he introduces it at the AIPAC conference, which is an enormous event.
Yes, it's what you call a red meat eating crowd. And the one thing that will always bring them to their feet is, of course, Jerusalem, mm-hmm. because Jerusalem is so religiously as well as politically important to Jews everywhere. So, yes, he played on that. I remember I was there. I was already ambassador at that point and come back with Yitzhak Rabin, who spoke at the conference. And this was not the policy of the Clinton administration. I was there as the representative of the Clinton administration. Everybody jumped to their feet, and I was up on the podium. And so I had no choice but to jump to my feet. But it was an awkward moment. But certainly, Bob Dole hijacked the issue and did so very effectively. And then nobody could or would speak out against it.
So at that point, effectively, he puts the Clinton administration and even Yitzhak Rabin into a corner.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, look, Rabin was skeptical of AIPAC anyway. He preferred just to deal with the administration, didn't like the fact that AIPAC was working with Congress. AIPAC was at that point ambivalent about the whole Oslo Accords because it involved shaking hands with Yasser Arafat, who had been the bete noire of the pro-Israel lobby for the previous, I don't know, since the 1960s. So it was really putting the cat amongst the pigeons at that particular moment, but there was no way that it could be stopped. The only way that Clinton could deal with it was to send his staff to the Hill and to negotiate waiver language, which would enable the president to waive the legislation that required moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem in the event of national security interests. And that was something that would have to be waived every 6 months, but it was put into the legislation and gave both Clinton and every president subsequent to him, except for Donald Trump most recently, the ability to in fact waive the requirement that the embassy should be moved.
Let's go back a moment. So you're on stage, everyone jumps to their feet. It's a moment that brings the house down. And what are you thinking? Are you rewriting your speech? Are you thinking Clinton has to rewrite his speech? Is Rabin rewriting his speech? What's happening in those next minutes?
I'm thinking I'm going to lose my job.
No. Well, it sounds like this has been again and again the case, right? There's apparently an anecdote about President Gerald Ford as well, that when he was in the House, he was very stridently pro-moving the embassy. And this is back in the 70s. And then he gets into the White House and says the view from the White House is different. I'm paraphrasing.
Right, exactly. And it was the same with every president. George W. Bush had made a big commitment that he was going to move the embassy. And I was still ambassador in Israel when he took over. And I remember getting an account. I wasn't in the meeting, but one of the first things he did was to consider what to do about this. And his first response to the people was, well, we're not going to do that. And they then developed this talking point for the Bush administration, which was, we're going to begin the process of moving the embassy to Jerusalem. And of course, they never did.
We've talked a lot about domestic politics in the U.S. playing a role. And of course, it comes up again and again in each presidential cycle. But in the moment, that spring, right before the AIPAC conference, right before Dole makes his explosive announcement, Netanyahu and the Likud, who were then in the opposition, were also lobbying Congress. Yeah. How aware were you of that?
Oh, very much aware. It was about Jerusalem. They were certainly pushing this idea of they were right behind Dole in terms of pushing it because it was seen by them as a way to undermine what Rabin was trying to achieve.
Meaning they wanted to unravel Oslo?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Oslo, to them, was seen as a disaster. For Netanyahu, as disastrous as the Iran nuclear deal, in a way. So, we were very, very much aware that they were messing with the peace process. But, you know, look, that's par for the course. What Bibi Netanyahu did when he came to address the Congress and attack President Obama's nuclear deal with Iran was not new. And the Israelis, I think it's more true of the right than the left. Israelis have seen Congress as a playing field that they can influence in their direction.
Why do you think it was such a? I mean, I think 93 senators voted for the Jerusalem Embassy Act once the waiver was inserted and kind of got a few of stragglers over the hump of caring for it. Why was it such a domestic political win? And why is it this thing that has become a stump speech, you know, standard?
Yeah. I think it's because Jerusalem is such an emotional issue for Jews and for American Jews and therefore for the pro-Israel community. And it's an easy one for politicians to say, you know, I support moving the embassy to Jerusalem. It's, there's no responsibility involved in that on their part, unless they're the president, and then they have to act differently in most cases. But I think it just became the easiest way for politicians to appeal to the Jewish vote. And I always thought we in the Jewish community were selling ourselves short by accepting that as some kind of litmus test, because it was so kind of obvious, pandering that had no consequence. This was the easy way out for the politicians. But it became, because of the emotional content, it became, and it's true to this day, Sheldon Adelson made it the condition for his support for Trump that he had to move the embassy to Jerusalem.
But this has always been symbolic, and on May 14th it becomes real.
Yeah.
And then what?
Well, life will go on. The question really is what impact will it actually have? I think that the impact of the decision to move the embassy physically now, together with Trump's own vanity claim that he solved the problem and he took Jerusalem off the table, has created a circumstance in which they will not be able to get the Palestinians and the Arabs back to the negotiating table. And in that sense, I fear that we'll look back on this 5 years, 10 years from now and say that was the point at which the last nail was put into the coffin of the peace process. There were already plenty of nails in it, but this will be seen as the last nail. Similarly, the Saudis, whom Jared Kushner had worked very hard on to get them to, in effect, deliver the Palestinians, have now told the administration that because of what they've done in Jerusalem, they can't help them anymore. And so you now have this peace plan that they have put the finishing touches to, Jared Kushner and Jason Greenblatt, is now, you know, never going to be presented. It's always soon. It's coming soon. Maybe it will actually be presented eventually, but I somehow doubt it. And so there's a consequence to decades of American attempts to resolve this issue and not being able to do so. And I think that our credibility has been undermined over time. It didn't start with President Trump. But President Trump has taken it to the extreme. So I'm going to give you the best example of this. If he had added one sentence to his rollout statement of his decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, that one sentence would have been, I also recognize that the Palestinians aspire to have their capital in East Jerusalem. That would have created a situation in which I believe he would have been able to bring the Palestinians back to the table.
You think just the word aspire?
Aspire, at that point, it would have made it clear that he recognizes the Palestinians also want their capital in Jerusalem. But because there was nothing for the Palestinians in the statement, other than this was going to be negotiated in final status, and because he subsequently said it's off the table, I've solved it, I've taken it off the table, he signaled to them, there's nothing for you in Jerusalem. And that just takes us beyond the lack of credibility, takes us beyond being an honest broker to being firmly on Israel's side on a final status issue.
But did the unraveling begin in the spring of 1995 with the passage of this highly symbolic act, even with its escape hatches?
You could say that, but I don't think it's actually true, because the waiver was there and every president had waived it, and it had become a kind of joke. But nobody really was pushing it with everything else going on. Nobody really expected that Donald Trump would push it, except for those that had in the interim become much more important in Republican politics, and that's the evangelicals. Mm. We haven't talked about them at all. But for the evangelicals, even more in some ways than for many Jews, moving the embassy became a part of a fulfillment of a biblical prophecy that would produce the end of days and the coming of the Messiah. And so I think that yes, you could say the act created, that laid the predicate for what happened, what is going to happen now with the movement of the embassy. But for many, many years, it really took the issue off the table. It's because of the waiver. It only became, an issue now, partly because of Trump's dislike for waivers, Trump's desire to differentiate himself from previous presidents, Trump's desire to show that he always lives up to promises he made in the campaign, no matter how much they might cause a problem for him once in office. And partly, I would say, actually mostly because it was a way of pleasing a critical part of his base, which is the evangelicals.
President Clinton is famous for his vociferous opinions. When this took place, when the Jerusalem Embassy Act was introduced, was he apoplectic? Was there a moment in a room where he lost his temper and, you know, slammed his fist to the table and said, how has this come about?
Well, I was living in Israel at the time, and so I wasn't in the Oval Office when the president dealt with this. I've heard that he was very frustrated by this move, because it put him in an impossible position. He had advocated to move the embassy, but now he adopted a very different role, which was very much part of his kind of life's work as president, which was to advance the peace process. And this was clearly going to complicate the peace process. And so he was in a situation where he couldn't stop it. If he vetoed it, it would be overridden just because it had such support because of its symbolic importance. He would have liked to stop it but didn't have the means to do so. Rabin couldn't help him. Because Rabin couldn't be seen to be opposing it, could never let it out that he had somehow been opposed to moving the embassy to Jerusalem. That's the nature of symbolic politics in this particular situation. Jerusalem is such a hot topic, it's so politically laden once you kind of get out there beyond the constraints, carefully developed constraints, it becomes impossible for politicians to do the right thing.
So
but what he did
decided-
was he sent Sandy Berger, he was deputy national security advisor at the time. He sent him up there, and they negotiated this waiver.
He sent him up to the Hill.
Yes, and I think that, as I recall, I mean, there was a lot of willingness to defer to the president in those days when it came to national security issues.
Mm-hmm.
And for Dole, I think it was a way to get all the Democrats on board so that he would become the real champion of what would become an overwhelming vote for the legislation. So there was, an interest on both sides in finding a way to give the president the ability to waive it. And so everybody kind of came out to live another day.
Every presidential candidate on both sides of the aisle has promised to move the embassy since the Jerusalem Embassy Act. Actually, prior to the Jerusalem Embassy Act, people were promising it. And then whoever wins gets into office, sits down in the Oval, and doesn't do it. So are they knowing it won't happen when they're speaking from the podium at AIPAC or in front of the AJC or on the campaign trail? Or is it just that the reality doesn't hit them until they're at the White House?
I think it's that when they're on the campaign trail, they'll say what they need to say to get votes. That's what politicians do in order to get elected. It would only be a Bernie Sanders type who would stand up and say, I'm not going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. But nobody else would be willing to do that, especially in places like New York or California, where the Jewish vote is consequential. And it was a cheap and easy way to vet their pro-Israel credentials on an emotional issue that the Jewish community cared about. But, you know, I think most Jews understood that this was all a game and that they wouldn't actually move the embassy to Jerusalem. But they wanted to hear it anyway.
But
it had an emotional frisson from that.
Ambassador Martin Indyk, it has been an honor to speak to you. Thank you for sharing all these great anecdotes. And the embassy will move on May 14th, 2018.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thanks so much. You've been listening to Foreign Policy's The ER Podcast. I'm Sarah Wildman, and I've been your host. The podcast is produced by Shelby Bosted. For more information about Foreign Policy and to subscribe to The ER, please visit foreignpolicy.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.